Hi everyone, I'm Kalila Reynolds and welcome to another live edition of Taking Stock. We're bringing you all the latest business news and telling you how it will affect you and your money. Now this is amazing. Our YouTube show has now landed none other than the Prime Minister of Jamaica. Imagine how social media has come so far, how Taking Stock has come so far in the past almost 4 years. We now have the PM joining us tonight, so this is a historic occasion. But before that, let me know if you're part of the Money Mission community, because if not, what are you waiting for? Head over to moneymission.mn.co or click the link in the description or the comments to join. Remember to hit the like button and subscribe to this channel. And of course, let me know in the chat where you're joining us from. I want to know what part of Jamaica and what part of the world you are watching us from tonight. We've got a great show lined up for you guys. So here's a look at what's coming up in tonight's show, followed by what's hot in business. And of course, come on, let's get this money.
Prime Minister Andrew Holness makes his first Taking Stock appearance to discuss the economy. Cost of living is hitting Jamaicans hard. What is the government doing about it? Unemployment is at a record low, but productivity is down. Are Jamaicans earning enough or too much? We'll ask him the tough questions. And the analysts weigh in on the latest market developments. There has been a sharp decline in the general activity on the Jamaica Stock Exchange this year. But why? And how can investors protect themselves? We'll discuss. But first, here's What's Hot, brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart. One Great Studios' basis of allotment for its IPO shares is out. The digital marketing agency's IPO was oversubscribed, closing a day after it opened. According to the agency, applicants in the reserved pools will receive 100% of the shares they applied for. Applicants in the general pool will receive the first 20,000 shares and 34% of the remainder. Investors who applied for less than 20,000 shares will receive the full allotment. One Great Studio is expected to list on the Juno market in the coming weeks. iCreate directors announced last week that they will be foregoing the release of their unaudited second quarter results and will release the audited version by the end of the month. The company had asked for an extension to publish the Q2 results on August 31. However, in a notice on the JSE, iCreate said that given their current situation, they will release both the audited Q2 and full year results on or before September 30. The audited results for 2022 were due in April. The JSE has suspended trading of iCreate shares until the audited results are released. The Financial Investigations Division says the fraud at SSL was bigger than first reported. They now say more than $10 million US was stolen from SSL customers through multiple fraud schemes. The FID has been investigating SSL since news of alleged fraud at the investment firm broke in January. In its latest update, FID revealed that the number of affected accounts has grown from 40 to 70. Former wealth advisor Jeanan Panton is the only person to be arrested in connection with the fraud so far. However, the FID said it expects more arrests to be made by the end of the year. Meanwhile, Finance Minister Dr. Nigel Clark said the government will temporarily pay SSL's operational costs, including salaries, to ensure the investigation continues. According to the minister, salaries and other expenses total approximately $15 million a month. Dr. Clark explained that employees had refused to work after not receiving their August salaries. He said the fraud investigation is at a critical point and the employees are essential in gathering information, so the government had to step in. He emphasized, however, that the move is temporary. 138 Student Living is looking to raise around $2 billion through an additional public offer. The company is offering 513 million new shares. 318 million shares are reserved for existing shareholders, 138 team members, and strategic partners. Those shares cost $4.05 each. Meanwhile, 195 million shares have been allocated for the public at $4.40 each. The lead broker for the APO is GK Capital Management. The offer is set to open on September 8 and close on October 6. What's Hot was brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart.
Attention! Are you struggling with money? Trying to figure out how to pay off your credit cards? Are you ready to learn how to invest and grow your money? I'm Kalila Reynolds, the Money General, and I'm on a mission to help you get better with money. Join me inside the Money Mission community, where I'll teach you how to manage money, make more money, and annihilate bad debt. Click the link in the description to sign up for your basic or premium membership. Let's get this money.
I took Kalila's Investing for Beginners masterclass because I heard there was an IPO launching and I just jumped right into it.
It helped me to know how to invest and the steps that you can involve to achieve your goals as well.
If it is that y'all are interested in learning about investments or anything, I really suggest that you hop on that class, that masterclass, because the way that I look at money now and saving, I look at it different now.
Kalila, you are the reason Marcella Brown started investing.
Learn the basics about stock market investing today. Investing for Beginners is available on demand or with a premium membership to the Money Mission community. Join now at moneymission.mn.co. The link is in the description.
This segment of Taking Stock is brought to you by Bulwark Insurance Agency. Insurance made easy.
Welcome back. So let's start out with our comments. Let's see who is joining us and where you guys are from. David says, this will be awesome. Chris says, welcome, Prime Minister, the Honorable Andrew Holness. Sean says, Toronto awaiting the cutting edge KRM Taking Stock to begin. We've got Alton waiting from Boston, Massachusetts. He says, KRM getting all the big interviews. Yes, as we should, rightly. Jermaine in Atlanta, chopping block. This is your first time joining live. Great to have you. We have Natty B down in Hanover. We have Craig saying really proud. David in St. James. Andreen has her popcorn ready. Alex checking in from the soon-to-be parish of Portmore. Negril in the building. We got Santa Cruz in the building. We got London representing. We got Dante all the way in the Cayman Islands, because you know, Taking Stock is international. So tonight, we have a very big guest. It is my pleasure to introduce the Honorable Prime Minister, Andrew Holness.
Good night, Kalila. Good night to all your listeners from around the world.
Good evening, and thank you so much for joining us. We sent in the official request about a month ago, and I really thought we'd be sitting here waiting for months and months on end. So I was surprised to get the call that you are ready to join us. So welcome.
Well, Kalila, let me say that you have been an outstanding journalist and you have paved a path in financial journalism that very few have managed to make a success of. And I want to commend you on your work in giving financial literacy access to Jamaicans.
Thank you so much. Well, let's start with one of the hottest button issues affecting everyday Jamaicans right now, and that is cost of living, inflation.
Yes.
Because when we look at the numbers, the economic numbers look pretty, you know. We finally have achieved the growth, the 5%. It didn't happen 5 and 4, it was more like 5 and 9, but it happened. We've achieved that. We now have record unemployment.
Any way it comes.
We now have record unemployment now at 4.5%. But when we go to the supermarket, it's just licking us in our pocket, left, right, and center. So what is the government doing to deal with inflation?
Well, we lost you for a moment there, but I suspect your question is, what is the government doing about inflation? First of all, the government established a very strong policy on inflation targeting, which is done primarily through the central bank. And the governor of the central bank is tasked with ensuring that our inflation rate is captured between 4% and 6%. That's the inflation target. The pandemic, however, has disrupted all of that, and not just for Jamaica, but globally. And we were as high as 12%. The central bank, which is tasked with managing inflation, using one of its main tools, which is the interest rate. They have used this tool, in my mind, very well to curb inflation. So they have increased interest rates, and they have done it in a very judicious way, and that has brought our inflation rate down to about 6.6%. That's just above the target, but still within reach. And I think that if we continue in the near term, we will see inflation in Jamaica going back to where we had targeted it. That is between 4% and 6%.
You know, the interesting thing about that, though, is that even though we say inflation is down to 6.6%, it's still up overall because the damage was done between last year and this year when it was 10%, 12%. And now the rate of increase isn't as much as it was last year, but it's still going up.
There's another thing that the government has done, Kalila, in recognizing that the inflation has cost fixed income earners. It has cost us in terms of purchasing power. And so we have increased where we have the leverage on wages. We have done that. So we have increased the minimum wage, and we have gone, we are going through a very comprehensive public sector compensation review, which would have seen an increase in general wage levels. And the governor of the Bank of Jamaica was also in the mix in trying to send a signal through moral suasion to the private sector to say, let us have our increases in an orderly way, because what we wouldn't want to introduce in the mix is wage inflation.
Right. So as you mentioned that issue, the point that the BOJ governor made, a lot of people were confused about that because, as you mentioned, the government recently increased public sector wages. So why all of a sudden is there now an issue with private sector doing the same when the public sector has set the pace for wages?
I'm not going to be drawn into that debate, Kalila, except to say that Jamaica is in a very different place than it was, say, 20 years ago. And that place is we are practically, for all intents and purposes, at full employment. And the definition of being at full employment is that you could have inflation being driven by wage competition. So it is something that we have to be very careful of. Not everyone will immediately realize this point, but it is something that our economic planners have to pay close attention to.
So speaking of that issue, Devin says, so how come politicians get 200% and teachers get 20? My question to you is, in hindsight, do you regret having given yourself and other parliamentarians that large of a raise, given
the current environment? Well, I'm happy for the question. I'm happy for the question. And by my own actions, I think you could easily see that I was not comfortable with the increases. Because we understand the nature of our politics. We understand that the Jamaican people indeed want to see their elected representatives act in solidarity with the entire country. Now, there are disparities, of course. The increases given to ministers and other members of the political class would have been greater than, let's say, what the average teacher would get. But there is a point that should not escape us. The old salary structures were inefficient, confusing, anomalous, and did not support a system that would lead to greater productivity, greater output, and greater accountability for performance. And so what the government did was to take a very comprehensive approach. We hired one of the largest consulting firms to assist us to look at the entire public sector, restructure it, and make it an orderly, logical, and cohesive compensation structure. There were over 300 points of classification within the old structure. We have narrowed that down now to 13 levels. Which is far more manageable. And the process that we are in now is to ensure that all public sector workers are fitted into this new structure. Now, what that has done is to set up to set us up now for the next phase of our development, and that is the proper and full institution of performance-based pay. So where we are now is that we have corrected all the anomalies in the old system of compensation. An anomaly, for example, where a permanent secretary or other members of the public service would earn more than, let's say, a minister who is responsible and bears that responsibility for an entire ministry. Bear in mind as well that ministers and parish councillors, for example, did not get any adjustments since 2002. So the adjustment that is being done now, which would see them move by 200%, that's 200% on a very low base. And therefore, yes, it does seem to be unfair when you just take this figure without the context of where their salaries were before. Having done this now, however, and established a proper hierarchy and relationship to roles and responsibilities and risks and time and effort, we are now at a point that if going forward we maintain this, we give the increases as they are due and increases based on productivity, Jamaica will never have to go back to this period again where it has where it had an anomalous compensation system, where persons with greater responsibility, greater roles, end up getting sometimes less pay than the people they supervise. And this was a part of the challenge. And if that exists in your system, and if it exists particularly in any wide scale, it is going to have an impact on the productivity and efficiency of your entire public sector system.
So when we look at this entire situation that the country is facing, the cost of living, price of goods, rent is going up, school fees gone up like crazy, especially in the prep schools because of the increases in the public sector school, the teachers increase and so on. How do we cope? What do we do, the ones on the ground who still have to find the money for the school fee, who still have to find the money to feed our children, who still have to find the money to try buy a house if you can, or afford rent, which is just through the roof right now?
I want to give, Khalila, I'm so grateful for this program. And I want to use it to give hope to the Jamaican people. I think I've been around long enough to see several back-to-school periods. And it is during back-to-school that the hardship really comes out because parents have to make household allocations in favor of education, and other areas will suffer. And poor households sometimes aren't able to make these kinds of allocations. But whilst the struggle continues, whilst definitely there are Jamaican households struggling to send their children back to school, I took the time yesterday and today to just analyze the back-to-school period. And it is clear that it went off seamlessly in most instances. This is not just because the Ministry of Education put things in place and the systems are in place. It is because the economy is recovering. It is because more persons are employed. And even if the income is a little bit lower, and though we have increased the minimum wage, and there is still the impact of inflation, the truth is that more Jamaicans have jobs, and therefore more households have income. The allocative decisions are still difficult. You have to make a choice between sometimes buying a full basket of food or buying books. And I'm hoping that the Jamaican people are making the right choices with their limited incomes to invest
what is
in
the right choice?
Education.
What is
housing.
The right choice in that situation? Books or food? Those seem non-negotiables.
Well, I'm not prescribing, and I'm very careful to do that in our democracy, but I can give guidance. I think that if you want to see a permanent change in your circumstances, you ask, what should we be doing? in our perpetual struggle as a people from the plantation to where we are now, we have to recognize that the struggle is not going to change by us giving up hope or throwing up our hands or making perverse choices. Our conditions and circumstances will change if we acknowledge that, yes, you know, things are difficult. As Bob Marley said, rain or fall, but the dirty tough. If we change our perspective and say the dirty tough, but rain is falling. Things are difficult, but more people are getting employed. Yes, we had a terrible bout of inflation, but it wasn't Jamaica alone. And the government has increased the minimum wage. The government has put $112 billion more into public sector compensation. The government has put in place what we call a social pension. So for those persons who weren't contributing to NIS and who didn't have a pension from previous employment, if they're 75 years and older, they can register for some support. The government has increased the support for the PATH program. So we're cognizant that things are difficult. We will never ever deny that. The struggle is real. The challenges are real. I see it every day. But things are improving. And so now is not the time for us to take a pessimistic or fatalistic view of the future.
Mm. Well, let's talk about taxes, PM, because that's one thing that is in your control as we talk about inflation and how people deal with it. Is it feasible to lower taxes at this time to make things a little bit more affordable for ordinary people?
You know, Khalila, as you know, as someone who is in the financial system, taxes are distortionary to how a free market would work. But they're an effective tool for gathering revenues, but they're also an effective tool for promoting or dissuading industries or consumption patterns. What we do not want to do with taxes is to play around with them too much. The policy of this government is to keep taxation stable. Once you price in what the tax is, regardless of what your income level is, but once you can price it in and you know that this tax is not going to increase on you, you're in a far better position. So a stable tax system is one that Jamaica has benefited from since this government has been running the administration. And I think people take it for granted that the taxes have been stable, but if they were to reflect on the 10 years before when taxes were unstable and how difficult that period was, then I think a greater appreciation would be had for what this government has done in keeping taxes stable. Having said that, we are a government that is committed to lower taxes. And we did that with 1.5, and we did that by reducing GCT. And it is our commitment. I don't want to say too much now, but I think the Jamaican people can rest assured that you have a government that believes in letting you keep more money in your pocket and letting you decide what you do with your income.
As you mentioned, 1.5, that was a big plank in your election campaign the first time, well, second time around, first time you won as PM. And, you know, somebody like me, still has to pay PAYE. I don't take that for granted. I appreciate that. But that was 9 years ago, 8 years ago. And things have changed. Inflation has taken off. And so now we're wondering what's going to happen with that income tax threshold. Is it time to raise that threshold again or eliminate that tax once and for all? Because you did say that you want to move from, what was it called?
Direct
to indirect taxes. Yes. And this is a question echoed by Christopher, who says, Honorable PM, do you think it's time for PAYE tax-free threshold to be adjusted?
Right. So as I said before, it is something that we are reviewing. And I don't really want to be pulled too much into it. But it is something that the government is favorably disposed to. We are indeed looking at it, having made all the adjustments with the compensation review, considering inflation, considering where we are in the economy. yes, it is something that we are considering. But again, just to give the assurance to Jamaican people that when you talk about a Jamaica Labour Party government, you're looking at a government that first of all wants to keep taxes stable, and then as the opportunities present themselves to reduce taxation generally.
I feel like you're saving that one for the next election.
So please don't let me reveal it now.
When is the next election going to be, by the way?
Well, whenever it is due.
And it's due, what, next year? 2020. No, so it's due 2025. Because we had an election.
The elections are constitutionally due. Khalila, let me jump in here quickly. Elections are an absolutely necessary part of a democracy. They define the democracy. But they can be very disruptive because the electoral cycle does not always match the economic and policy cycles. And so that has to be managed very carefully. You wouldn't want elections to cause people to, for example, change their investment decisions. To say, well, you know what, I'm not going to put my money in until I'm certain where the government is going. That will slow up economic growth, which is why we have always tried to have the election period very short and routinely called when it is due. So for just to put everybody at ease, I think Jamaicans right now should not get distracted by elections. When the elections are due, we will have them. But right now, let's keep our long-term vision and not let the election cycle interfere with economic and policy cycles.
Okay, let me take some questions from our Instagram and TikTok followers. PM, when I said you're coming on, the questions came flooding in. Everybody has something that they want to ask you. So here is one from Johnny. Johnny wants to know what's being done to lower fuel costs.
That's a question that fuel costs are not necessarily within the managing them within the purview of government. It's really the international prices. We are price takers for fuel. However, Petrojam does try to ensure that we have the best contract prices for the fuel that we purchase. Bear in mind as well that a large part of our fuel imports are also done by the private sector. And so the market forces are at work to try and keep the prices down. They're trying to get the best prices on the international market.
Justine wants to know, how is digital currency going to improve the financial situation of Jamaica? And is there a strategy to improve our dollar?
Well, let's start with the dollar. If you want a success story, it is the stability of the Jamaican dollar, and it is stable, not in any artificial way or any managed way. Jamaica has a free floating currency, basically, probably one of the few countries in the region that has that. And that is an amazing achievement, considering what we used to pay to keep the dollar stable. Not many Jamaicans realize that we used to keep interest rates high, and we used to find ourselves at the mercy of speculators just to try and have a target price for the dollar. No, the dollar is relatively stable using market forces and proper management from the BOJ. So that's an achievement that all Jamaicans can have pride in. In terms of the digital currency, there was an unfortunate debate which surrounded the government trying to eliminate cash, which that was never the case. There is a global trend that digital forms of transactions are increasing innumerably. And it is eventually going to be the case that digital transactions will probably, in years to come, outnumber cash transactions. Jamaica has to put itself in a position to have the infrastructure to facilitate digital transactions, and a digital currency is one such infrastructure that has to be put in place. So the Bank of Jamaica has put in place our central bank digital currency, which is available. It has not been as widely and universally made available as we would like, but we have made that positive step towards that. But that is just one form of digital transactions. And when you look at the banking reports, you will see that a significant number of local transactions are moving to online and digital platforms.
But you know, there is a lot of skepticism about digital currency and a lot of pushback against. Every time I post a video about it, people tell me I'm Mark of the Beast and I'm this and I'm that, all kind of foolishness. But do you think it makes sense for Jamaica to be pushing digital currency when it appears that the majority of the population is against it?
So we're not pushing a currency on anyone. Jamaica is a democracy. And what we try to do always is to preserve options for persons. So if you want to use cash, there should be the option for you to use cash. But if you feel that you are up to the digital world, then that option is there for you. Now, there is a huge difference in terms of efficiencies, in terms of potential for economic opportunity in using digital platforms versus using cash and in-person transactions. We saw that during the pandemic. If it is one thing that the pandemic did, it is to open up the acceptance of digital means for settling transactions. So what Jamaica is doing is to ensure that we have the infrastructure to both carry our traditional means of transactions, cash, and to certainly expand in the digital domain to ensure that Jamaica is not left behind in this new form of settling transactions.
So PM, over on Instagram and TikTok, by far the number one question that people wanted me to ask you was about SSL. We know that the entire situation has eroded investor confidence. The markets have been performing poorly all year. And now we have this announcement by your finance minister that the government is going to be paying SSL's operational expenses to the tune of $15 million a month. So I have this question from Instagram. Why do taxpayers have to pay for SSL's criminal operations, quote unquote? How are we being held accountable and not those governing that corrupt entity?
Yeah, I do share the sentiment, and I can understand how people feel about the SSL matter. But I just wanted to be clear. SSL, in the grand scheme of Jamaica's non-bank financial sector, it would be relatively small, but its impact and the signal it sends is one that is disturbing on several levels. It hasn't really, in my estimation, shaken the financial system, thank God. There are robust institutions and a strong regulatory framework, though it did show up some areas that need to be tightened up. But on a social level, it has raised this issue about whether or not private decisions that lead to business or financial failure, whether or not those private decisions should be, as they say, socialized into public debt. So when private businesses make profit, the public doesn't really benefit. I mean, the public may get taxes and so forth, but the private person holds the majority of the benefit. So the public is right in asking, why should the public then have to pay for a fraud or poor management of an institution? I want to repeat my position, which I had made very clear, that the government of Jamaica will not be in any way taking on any debt of any private institution that has failed. We are not going to bail out any private institution that has failed. We went through FinSAC, and we are determined not to repeat that in any way, shape, or form. But the public is also asking that this matter be thoroughly investigated, and the government made a commitment to thoroughly investigate the matter. It is one of those conundrums, because in order for the matter to be thoroughly investigated, even with the FID and with the appointment of a special investigator to deal with this matter, and with the regulatory authorities also supervising, the truth is that we need the staff of SSL to keep the computer systems up and running. We need the staff of SSL to maintain the records. It would be a far more expensive exercise if SSL were to close tomorrow and the staff goes home, and then the investigators on their own having to try and piece together the puzzle. So I think the Minister of Finance found himself in this quandary where, having known my very strong position that we are not bailing out any company, having now to see to it that the infrastructure to facilitate the investigation, which the public would want to see come to some conclusion, that we ended up having to pay for, but only a short time, the maintenance of the staff. None of this is going to the principals of SSL, or indeed to anyone who had invested in SSL. This is primarily just to keep the operation there, which is necessary to facilitate the investigation. I just wanted to emphasize that. So my point is, I feel just like how everyone feels in the public, that, you know, the principals of SSL or people who invest there, you know, the public is not going to pay for that. But what the public would want to see is that we are able to track and trace and recover the funds that have been defrauded and have it returned to the people who were defrauded of their funds. And that is the cost of actually getting that done.
Is there a deadline on how long the government is going to continue paying these operational expenses?
I had a briefing last night from the Minister of Finance, and it's very difficult. I asked the same question. Very difficult to establish a time, as in a date. But I've been assured that the investigations are at an advanced stage. The FID reported progress to us last week. And so the question is that any support would be very short term, and I interpret short term to be months, 2 or 3.
Okay. All right. So the last thing I really want to ask you about, PM, is crime. That was another one that a lot of people underscored, that they said, you know, please make sure you ask Andrew about crime and how it relates to business. Of course, you know, this is one of the major, if not the number one reason that Jamaica has not been growing as fast as its potential, as fast as it can, because we have to deal with crime. Employers have to spend extra money on security. It's just one of those things that we have to get right, that we have to be able to solve somehow. So give us an update on what you're doing about Jamaica's crime problem.
So I like the way you've asked the question, which you've hit the nail on the head, that crime is an economic cost to the country. And we pay for it in having to make additional expenditure for security, additional cost for things like ensuring our health system deals with the victims of crime. But more and more, we're seeing other costs of crime. And primarily, we're seeing it through the cost of violence. Our society has become violent to a toxic level. And it is costing us as a people on an interpersonal level. The cost of social transaction is very high. And you are seeing it in increased cases of mental health issues. We are seeing it with grossly deviant behavior, with gruesome crimes. We look at the recent slaying of an 8-year-old girl. We're seeing it in...
Today had a family.
Yes. And we're seeing it in the organization of violence. So we have a problem with organized crime, organized criminal gangs who are set up to pursue economic opportunities illegally. So you see it in the lottery scamming, you see it in the contraband, you see it in drugs and so forth. But it becomes a much more difficult and intractable issue when they use violence as a tool. So it's not just about committing a robbery. It's you're going to kill everyone that you see in the store. It's not just about sharing up the money of the lottery scamming. You end up in an argument over, oh, that is shared, and you end up killing three or four people in a community. And then that translates into just general violence. So we have a problem with not just crime, but the real problem is treating with violence. So the short answer is we have put in place significant investment to treat with crime. And I'm pleased to report that murders, for example, are almost 11% down over last year. Shootings are about 9% down. Robbery and other serious violent crimes are down by 20% on average. So we're getting good results from the investments that we're making. Still a long way to go, but we're seeing more results in increasing the size of the police force and the military, in increasing their capabilities, particularly in communications and transportation, and in building out their intelligence network, and in terms of training, giving the police special training. And I must commend the JCF. They have some very well-trained special operational personnel in their ranks that are basically now being able to deal with lottery scamming, anti-gang operations, and so forth. So we are making progress on the crime level. You would note that, for example, a case with the 8-year-old girl, Danielle, who was killed, may have taken years or months before to find the perpetrator. With the excellent investigative work and the use of technology, we were able very quickly bring to justice the person who has been charged. And then you would have seen that with the Berlin case and other cases that the police have been able to interdict persons for that. So I would say that, yes, it does feel sometimes very scary when we talk about the crime issue, but crime we're getting under control. Where we have a challenge now is the use of violence. And that is the next phase of the government's strategy. We have put in place.
What's the difference, crime versus the use of violence? What do you mean by separating those two?
Right. So, so in other words, you have societies where there's a lot of crime. There are a lot of, you know, people are breaking the law. Whether it is they're doing robberies or rapes or other such kinds of criminal activity. But the issue for us is the organized use and indeed the general use of violence to the point of taking life. So it is a total disregard for the person and a total disregard for life. And that is what we're struggling with now in Jamaica. And so we have recognized this, that we have to treat with violence. Violence in our interpersonal relationships, violence in our intimate partner relationship, violence in our domestic disputes. One of the things we have picked up, because we are bringing gang-related crimes under control, we are seeing an upsurge in these kinds of interpersonal and domestic violence. We're seeing brothers killing brothers, father killing son, daughter killing father. And we're seeing a number of these kinds of violent act coming to the fore. So we have put in place now the National Commission for the Prevention of Violence, headed by Professor Sams Vaughan, who will shortly deliver a report to us And once that report comes to us, then we will put in place an entirely new structure, which may even mean a new ministry dedicated to treating with just the family, social development, social interaction, to ensure that we are a less violent society, so that we don't rely on the use of fatal force or force that causes injury or trauma in the resolution of conflicts.
You know, if there's one thing that I wish you much success on, and I wish you success on many things, but the number one thing would be crime. I really, really hope, and I know it's a priority for the government, I really, really hope that you're able to achieve the crime reduction plans and the decrease in the use of violence, as you pointed out, because that would make such a major difference, not just for, you know, our quality of life here, but also for business and for the perception of Jamaica by people who may want to do business with us, but are scared to invest here.
You have put it in, you know, your insight is to be commended. The crime and the violence is now affecting our brand. You would recall in the early days, our tourism slogan was Jamaica, no problem, easygoing, happy, peaceful people. Now, with the level of crime that is creeping onto the international stage and people with social media, we have a tendency to circulate all the gruesome pictures and the gory details. It is impacting on how people see us as a destination. And we have to be careful of that. It's creeping into everything. It's creeping into our music, creeping into our daily interaction. And as a society, we have to be cognizant of it, that being violent is not the only way to exist, that there is something for civility and decency and being loving and caring about your brother and your sisters.
Yeah, and it's not new, because when I moved here, I moved to Jamaica 15 years ago, and everybody said I was crazy. Jamaica? Crime? You're not afraid?
But I would say to you, though, Kalila, that it is not a Jamaica problem. I know your homeland, Belize, is having similar challenges.
That is very true.
Prime Minister, with Prime Minister Briceño quite a bit. Trinidad and Tobago, they are facing similar challenges. It is a very interesting time in our development as developing countries. And it is studied, I think, but I think more academic resources ought to be put into it as to why is it that countries like Jamaica have this level of violence. It could be a result of post-slavery, post-colonial issues. But it could also be how we treat with freedom. There are other countries in Latin America who have this similar problem, and they have taken a particular direction in treating with it. So there is also the issue of how do we treat with our freedom, and what do we use our freedom to use our freedom to abuse it, or do we use our freedom to protect ourselves? And these are questions that a society needs to confront.
Is the PM frozen? Is he there?
Okay, no, yes. I'm not.
Okay, I thought we lost you for a second there. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Prime Minister. There are many, many, many more questions in the chat. Unfortunately, guys, I can't get to all of them. We'd be here all night well into tomorrow. I think we got to most of the major ones that we've already taken you beyond the agreed time. So thank you once again for, you know, being on Taking Stock, your first time, hopefully the first of many more to come.
Well, Kalila, again, let me commend you for creating this new pathway of financial literacy and financial entertainment, if you want to call it that, and for taking it into new media. That's a brave and bold new step, and I wish you all the success, continued success in this endeavor. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you once again, Prime Minister. So guys, what do you think about this entire conversation? I've been seeing the comments in the chat, but let me know some more. What are your reactions? Right now, though, it's time for tonight's poll question. What are your thoughts on 400 teachers resigning right before the start of the school year? A, good for them. They're underpaid anyways. B, it's selfish to resign on such short notice. C, we have enough teachers to replace them. D, let's see how it impacts the semester. Or other, leave a comment. You can take this poll in the community section of our YouTube channel or on the app formerly known as Twitter, now known as X. So let us know, what do you think about the 400 teachers resigning right before the start of the school year? Right now, it's time for your hurricane tip from our sponsor, CG United.
Hurricane tips are brought to you by CG United. It's good like that.
Time frame where insurance companies do not accept any changes to a current policy, such as an increase of your insured values or any new business. In other words, they do not accept new risks or changes to existing risks due to an impending hurricane or storm. This is enforced to reduce the risk to any insurance company, and it's a standard market procedure. The best time to seek insurance coverage is when everything is normal. So if you wait until a storm has been declared and is almost certain to affect where you live, your insurer will turn down your application for coverage. Yeah, you can't wait till a car crash to go try apply for insurance, right? Same thing with hurricanes. You can't wait until a storm is here or almost here to go try apply for insurance. That was your hurricane tip brought to you by CG United.
Hurricane tips were brought to you by CG United. It's good like that.
Up next, we've got your market recap, and the analysts are standing by.
This segment of Taking Stock was brought to you by Bulwark Insurance Agency, insurance made easy.
Hey, moneymakers, join the KRM fam with our official merch. Get it now at KalilaReynolds.com. Let's get this money.
The JSE Combined Index lost over 4,500 points in August. 126 stocks traded across the main and junior markets for the month, 50 made gains, 70 lost value, and 6 stayed the same. 537 million shares changed hands on the Jamaican dollar market, valued at $2.6 billion. Now here's a look at some of the highlights for the month of August. The main index lost 1%, the junior market was down 0.5%, while the financial index was mostly stable, and the manufacturing and distribution index lost almost 3%. Trans-Jamaican Highway 8% was August's most traded stock. It took up 21% of market volume. People bought and sold 118 million shares in the company. The stock opened September at $1.64. TJH 8% was also the second biggest loser for August, down 21%. Wigton was the month's second most traded stock. It lost 5 cents to open the new month at 76 cents. And Trans-Jamaican Highway rounded out August's most traded. It gained 4 cents to start September at $2.58. Now let's see who had the biggest gains for the month. ISP Finance was August's biggest gainer. The stock climbed 50 cents to start the new month at $36.17. Margaritaville Turks USD had the second biggest jump in June. It closed the month at 12 cents US. And Main Event was the third biggest gainer. It was up 19% to start September at $17.48. On the losing side now, Stationery and Office Supplies was last month's biggest loser. It lost 38% to open the new month at $1.85. And Elite Diagnostic rounded out the month's biggest losers. The stock fell 20%, closing the month at $1.59. Over on the Trinidad and Tobago Stock Exchange, the Composite Index lost 2% last month. Massey was the most traded stock of the month. It lost 33 cents to open September at $4.57 TT. Trinidad Cement was the biggest gainer, up 12%. It opened the new month at $3.20 TT. And on the losing side, Trinidad and Tobago NGL fell 18% to open at $14.62 TT. Over in the US, the Dow Jones lost almost 1% in August, while the S&P 500 and the Nasdaq both gained about 1%. At the pumps, gas prices rose by $8.50 in August, while regular diesel prices climbed $13.12 for the month, and low sulfur diesel rose by $12.92. In foreign exchange, overall the Jamaican dollar strengthened in August, gaining 16 cents against the US dollar to close the month at an average $155.42 to 1 US. The JMD also strengthened against the Canadian dollar and British pound. However, the Jamaican dollar lost 88 cents to the euro. Finally, on the crypto markets, Bitcoin prices fell 11% for the month, trading at $25,924 US on August 31. And Ethereum was also down 11%, trading at $1,645 on August 31. This segment of Taking Stock, the Analysts, is brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart. Disclaimer: this is not intended as financial advice. Please consult a licensed financial advisor before making investment decisions.
Welcome back. Before we introduce the analyst panel, let me take some of your comments. Quite a few of them coming in the chat. Leon said, Kyle being lauded by the PM. Love it. That was at the beginning. Some of y'all trying to give me awards saying I must get an OD. Thank you so much. But then you have other people like Richard who said that I was too soft on him. Hey, I can only do the best that I can. If you think it was soft, then that's your opinion. So, and I'll take it as well. I take criticisms, I take praise, whichever one you want. Let me see what else we have. Raquel noting that we had over 1,000 viewers joining the live, a new record. We had almost 1,200 at one point. So that's awesome. Let me see what else we have here. Shan saying, excellent interview, and a bunch of other comments, a lot of them directed at the PM. So let's get into the analysts. Time to introduce our analyst panel for this evening. And who do we have up this time? Let me see. Okay, I'm joined by Greg Lindo, who's Assistant General Manager of Trading and Treasury at JMMB. Greg is riding solo this evening. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Kalila. Only me today.
Yes, great to have you. All right, so let's look at it. With interest rates remaining at a 12-year high, there's been a sharp decline in the general activity seen on the Jamaica Stock Exchange. Like, the trading is just, people just not trading, as buyers are retreating and sellers are seeking cash. So tell us more about this. What's going on, Greg?
Well, the PM and yourself touched on it very well at the beginning of the interview. You have inflation, right? You have inflation that's affecting the disposable income of many persons, which invariably leads them to make decisions. You spoke about the supermarket and school fees, which, you know, of course, that's the reality of many persons now, many persons that do invest. So because of that, I mean, disposable income is tighter. Persons naturally have to make decisions about what they spend their money on, which may mean in some instances, you know, there's less money to invest, or they may have to divert from investing to using their investments to supplement their consumption. This is not natural just for us. I mean, in the States, I read a report where US persons are blowing through their pandemic savings, and they're also facing an inflation problem. So that's one of the aspects of why you may see lower trading overall. Let's not forget that interest rates, as you mentioned, they're at a 12-year high. What does that mean for investors? It doesn't just mean, okay, you walk in, you get a higher rate on your certificate or deposit, or you buy a CD at a higher rate, or treasury bills. Of course, yes, fixed income securities have become more attractive because of those interest rates. But on the flip side, if you're a borrower, if you have a mortgage, if you have a car loan, you're now having to pay, in many cases, more to keep those items, right? And of course, if you say to somebody, well, you have a choice, you know, is it that you pay your mortgage, or is it that you invest? If they don't have the income, then naturally most persons might say, well, I can't lose the roof over my head. That's persons, that's probably their biggest safety net is their house. So it's not it's not unexpected to see that there's an impact on trading. And I mean, anybody that's done Finance 101, there's a basic relationship between markets where they say when interest rates are high, equities tend to fall off. And when interest rates are low, which is what we saw going up to through COVID and the market was supported, the markets tend to perform very better. But it's been a very difficult time for the markets. If we look at where we were, say, December 2019, on the combined index to where we are now, you're looking at about a 30% decline, which it could be worse. It really could be worse. But keeping the general context of what we're seeing in mind and how investors are being impacted, it's really an expected outcome as far as I see it.
But are investors right to be concerned and wary and cautious at this time? Or should they, you know, hold strain and know that the market has cycles? Sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down.
Yeah, certainly. Warren Buffett always says, you know, when others are fearful, be greedy. When others are greedy, be fearful. And I do believe in that. But it comes down to, do you have the resources? So on the market, no, there is an opportunity. There are stocks on the market that are trading at valuations that would have been unheard of in the last 2-3 years. I'm talking low single digits for some of the main market companies. Even some of the junior market companies have come down significantly. And these are companies that supposedly have a lot of growth ahead of them. So, you know, if you invested in the market, some persons may have been a bit wary because they may have seen the value of their portfolio take a significant hit. And, you know, the psychology of that is you start to feel discouraged. You start to feel like, well, this doesn't make any sense and I'm not going to do anything more. But it's very important for persons to stay invested because, as you said, Khalil, it's a cycle. It's not going to last forever. Interest rates will, at some point, I don't want to say normalize, but the interest rate environment will become better. As the PM said, I mean, the country is growing, so that's a positive. So there is potential for a lot of these companies that may have not been doing as well to see a nice rebound. So definitely, I'm not a gloom and doom person. I mean, yes, there is risk, and it's all about risk management. So going back to what I said a while ago, it's about your resources. Now, for the persons that may not necessarily have a choice and they have to maybe liquidate their portfolio to meet obligations, that's unfortunate, but that's reality. That's reality. And you just have to plan around how you get back on track in terms of managing your budget to ensure that you leave yourself enough room to invest. Because ultimately, if you want to create wealth, you're going to do it through investing, which is stock market, real estate, fixed income, you know, whatever your appetite may be, you speak to your financial advisor, but it doesn't happen if you're not invested. So certainly you want to keep your funds in the market. And if you need to make some adjustments, you make some adjustments, but certainly it's not going to last. What's happening now is not going to last forever.
So Philip has the question of the year on that point. He said it's not going to last forever, but how long? When will we see the turnaround? That's the thing. If we have to hold strain, okay, how long do we have to hold strain from? And if history repeats itself, what does history tell us about how long we may have to continue
being? Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, everybody gets asked that question, right? In the sector, the economists are asked, when are things going to improve? And, you know, some persons will say, you know, well, you know, we expect interest rates to decrease or start to turn. I mean, at first we would have heard in December, but then because things are happening in this overseas in terms of the U.S. Fed looking to increase rates, that might hold the hand of the central bank locally to push rates down. So it's now moved from December to maybe the first quarter next year. So, I mean, I do think that, you know, if you look at it positively, right, we are starting to see transactions come into the market, like IPOs. We had our first junior market IPO for One Great Studio in August. There's a APO out now. So those transactions kind of give you a peek in terms of what is the investor psyche and sentiment saying. I can't say when exactly it will turn around because the market doesn't necessarily always seem to even respond to positive fundamental news, right? So I think when the environment improves is largely when we start to see a loosening of monetary policy. Maybe interest rates start to come down. Some persons get a reprieve. And the general availability of money starts to flow into the market, which is what the central bank is trying to control. If we look at other markets globally, typically they perform best when monetary policy tends to be loose. So, I mean, I would typically say that I would expect something similar here, because if the noose is tight around persons' necks, their capacity to respond to go into the market will be limited. So I can't give you a date. I mean, I hear first quarter next year, second quarter next year, but I mean, I'm not a central banker.
Or a psychic.
or a psychic. But what I will say is that don't wait till the market turn around. I mean, if you can make a general assessment as to something that you may have liked that looks good, they're consistently performing or improving their performance and the price isn't moving, then it may be an opportunity for you. It may be an opportunity for you to take advantage of it, because once it turns, you know, and it starts to move, you might find yourself on the outside not able to get in. So that's what I would say.
Now, you mentioned the 1GS IPO, and yeah, the basis of allotment was announced yesterday evening. Investors are getting the first 20,000 shares that they applied for, plus 34% of the balance that's in the general public pool. What do those numbers tell you about the investment appetite right now, especially for IPOs?
I think it was reasonable. It was the 34% was a bit similar to the previous IPO, which was IPCL, although 1GS did give an additional 10,000. I think most persons were thinking they would get a minimum of 10,000 plus a percentage, but you got 20,000 plus a percentage. But what it tells me is that, look, there is still an interest in IPOs, albeit it's not maybe to the magnitude of what you would have seen in early 2021.
Right.
But these were fairly large junior market IPOs, right? They were fairly large junior market IPOs, meaning they were more like 400 million thereabouts, when some of the IPOs late last year and early last year were like 100 mil or less. So the bar to move to have a small allocation would be much, much easier. But it does show that there's an interest, right? And I think that given this first one is through and it will be listed in short order, there will be others. Others will come. It's just a matter of time. So I don't think that the market capacity is what it is in 2021 to what it is now. Because when you look at the key metrics, if you look at trade value, between the same period up to the end of August 2023 compared to 2022, it's down like almost 60%. The number of transactions are down, I think, around 50%. So those are significant numbers you can't ignore, but there is still an appetite, which is important. I remember the days when IPOs never had to be fully subscribed, when IPOs would be undersubscribed. I've seen where IPOs have not raised the minimum amount and had to be canceled. Wow. You don't want to go back to those days, right? So when I see it now and I'm looking at it through that lens, the fact that there's still an appetite in my mind is good, because it's a tough environment. It's a very, yeah, very difficult environment.
And even in this tough environment, still being oversubscribed.
Yeah, yeah.
Coming from, you know,
give thanks for small mercies, because there were worse times, right? The market has seen worst times. And I've been in a market where interest rates were much, much higher than where they were now. And it was significantly different. So, you know, I remain positive. I mean, it's a cycle. For those that have the risk appetite, hey, I mean, go shopping. You know, there are some deals out there. So certainly, you know, get your pencil and your paper and your working notes and make your decisions, right?
I remember when single digit interest rates were a dream. Oh, you had Audley Shaw. This was around the time when I first started working in Jamaica, and we're covering Audley Shaw was Minister of Finance at the time under Bruce Golding, and his constant vision and demand and call was for single digit interest rates.
Yeah. And we got it.
I remember that so well, because every single function he would speak at, he would speak about we need to move towards single digit interest rates. Right now, we're saying interest rates are high, but they're still generally single digits.
Yeah, they're still below JDX levels. So certainly when you lower interest rates and you create an environment where funding costs are low, then changing it in a short space of time, because I mean the central bank did increase pretty aggressively because they wanted to get ahead of the US Fed, that's going to cause a bit of a knee jerk. But relatively speaking, I mean, we're not back in the days of 25%, and the prime minister spoke to it when we had to pay a cost to actually maintain the value of our currency. That was 25-30% interest rates. We actually saw a revaluing dollar last year. So the dollar revalued, I think, by 2%. So the environment isn't bad, but it's necessary, because if you don't control inflation, then the situation gets much worse in terms of persons' affordability and how they live their daily lives. So we're obviously saying that we understand it has to be maintained. But it's not, it could be worse. It could be a lot worse.
I'm going to take this final question from Pablo. Pablo says, the JSE has almost no correlation to the real Jamaican economy. Public participation is so low, it has almost no impact on the ordinary Jamaican. When will this change?
Good question. It will change when more people invest. And I mean, we still are at a very low penetration point for persons to invest in the market. And what you'll find is that when you have a wider market, then it may be a little bit more reflective of the reality of the country. But the country has been on a generally positive trajectory, and our market has been on a positive trajectory if you look over the medium to long term. But of course, what's happening with interest rates, which is not unique to us, that will likely it is having a negative impact here and in other places too. So if we get a deeper market, if more persons invest in the market, then I think the dynamic of it will actually shift when persons start to take advantage of the opportunities to build wealth through the JSE.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me this evening, Greg, riding solo, but some great points. Thanks again.
Have a good evening.
You too. And to our viewers, all right, that's it for the analysts. We'll be back with our final comments from the viewers.
This segment of Taking Stock, The Analyst, was brought to you by JMMB Group, your best interest at heart.
What do you do when you're suddenly hit with a big unexpected expense? If you have children in prep school like me, I have two, you've gotten the note that school fees are going up by as much as 50%. So you're stressed out right now, huh? At this point, you may be considering some of these options. So you may be looking to reallocate funds, maybe cancel summer vacation, take out a loan or put it on a credit card, move your kids to public school, or you just gotta step up your hustle. But we can figure it out. That's the thing. Realistically, all we have to do is plan.
My name is Tamika Thomas Shaw. My top things today were about budgeting and investing. While the session on budgeting started off making me feel as if, oh boy, I've not been doing myself much justice in this area, I opened my eyes as to what I can do, and especially the app that you shared with us. So I will definitely be putting the action.
Build your budget with me inside the Money Mission community. You'll get my BYB template, app recommendations, and live brainstorming sessions to help you plug those income gaps. Build Your Budget is available on demand or with a premium membership to the Money Mission community. Join now at moneymission.mn.co. The link is in the description.
In the sweltering heat of Jamaica, a humble appliance attempts to tame the relentless blaze. Enter the Lasco fan, valiantly striving to provide respite from the scorching temperatures. With blades spinning and air circulating, the Lasco fan becomes a symbol of hope in the face of oppressive heat.
We not about that life. We have AC money. We have JPS money. Join me and the money makers inside the Money Mission community.
So I've actually been a bit quiet over the past couple of weeks in the Money Mission community, but we will be dropping the calendar for the next 6 months this week. So you can know exactly what's coming up and when it's coming up inside the community. I feel like that's something that's been missing. We're still, you know, this is new. We're still figuring it out. I have a list of long list of webinar ideas. And if you guys have something that you want to learn within the community that we can possibly facilitate, let me know in the chat. Let me know in the comments. What do you need from me? What do you need from us? What can we do for you? Let me know. I am here to help you learn whatever it is that you need to learn to get through this difficult period, because this economy ain't it right now. This heat ain't it. We need the AC money. We need it bad, bad, bad. So before we go, let me take a few more comments from the chat. Let me see what we have. Ryan says, this is on the issue of crime. Government may have to hire its own artists to sing songs that counteract the violent songs now played in hope to change the culture of most Jamaicans, especially the youths. That's not a bad idea. Hopefully more artists, you know, can take it upon themselves to do it as well. But definitely we want some more positive influences on the radio, on YouTube, on, you know, whatever platforms people are on right now, TikTok and these places. Strong Link commenting to Greg, I suppose, we need some JMMB dividends. And then David responded that JMMB recently paid dividends, actually. Shelley said, one GS IPO should not be counted. That's like chicken feed money. Let's see what a real IPO asking billions does. Well, there's an APO out right now, the 138 student living APO. I don't remember exactly how much. Let me find out. I can check exactly how much money they are seeking to raise. It was in What's Hot earlier. Let me bring it up. How much money 138 student living wants. It's all the way at the end. Here we go. They're offering 513 million new shares. They're looking to raise $2 billion. Okay. So, but then, I don't know, people don't gravitate to APOs the same way they gravitate towards IPOs. So I don't know if that's the right test either. Pro Surfer says, my favorite book on economics is Dr. Claude Anderson's Powernomics. Read it good. Thanks for the recommendation, ProSurfer. I'll check it out. Philip says, pension funds and unit trusts should buy more stocks. Simple. Charlene says, that's a recipe for inflation. Low interest rates where the cost to borrow money is low increases the ability to more money in the economy. Roswell says, we may have some wrong people investing who can't even reason on any company regardless of how well a company performs. I don't believe those trading stocks know much or anything at all. Well, for those who don't know, that's why you have me. Join the Money Mission. Take Investing for Beginners class inside the community. And then finally, we have Lily, who says that I don't look like somebody who sweats. You know, that's true. I don't sweat a lot. Blessing, I suppose. I naturally don't sweat much. Not a big issue that I have to deal with. Thank you guys so much for tuning in this evening. Make sure that you like the video, subscribe to the channel, share with a friend. Make sure you're on the newsletter at kalilareynolds.com/newsletter. And of course, new email subscribers get a copy of my free broker guide. So everybody who keeps asking me which firm you should sign up with, check out the comparisons in the broker guide. And that's what is going on. Of course, there's always time to sign up for the Money Mission community. Turn on those post notifications so that you can be the first to see everything when they drop. We want to help people learn more about money so we can all get this money together. Follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Kalila Ray. And remember, those are my only accounts. I have no backup accounts, so no need to DM me a million times asking, is this you? No, it's not. I will never message you asking for money or asking for you to invest with me because I don't do investments on behalf of other people. If you want to connect with tonight's analyst, check the description box below for Greg's contact information. And you can also visit our website, KalilaReynolds.com, for financial information you can use however you like it. Watch, listen, or read. Now tell a friend about taking stock because investing is the new sexy. So let's make it cool to talk about money. I'm Kalila Reynolds. Thanks for watching.
Let's get this money.